Ladies and gentlemen of the Clean Technica audience and family, we have such a special episode for you today. Today, I get a chance to sit with two of my favorite people in the world, Derek Markham and Zach Shahan, our family and our team here at Clean Technica. We recently turned 16 years old as a website, and our company has been promoting cool stuff for that long, and it's been a crazy journey. We've reached over 500 million page views on the website, cleantechnica.com, in addition to all the stuff we've done on video and audio, reaching well over 160 million unique people. And the two guys that I'm going to sit down here with are primarily responsible for the whole thing. They have been there since the beginning. They deserve all the accolades. These guys are incredible. And we get to tell some stories about what clean tech looked like 16 years ago when we all got started in this space. We're not going to talk about what we looked like 16 years ago in that space physically, but let's not go there. We will talk about the industry and how it has changed. It's been amazing. Some really cool stories. You'll get to hear a lot of things about how Zach got his start, kind of taking over Clean Technica and running it in a very unexpected way. And then within a couple of years, working his way to being labeled in a top 20 list of people who have influenced the EV revolution and fuel efficiency standards, a top 20 list with Barack Obama, Mike Bloomberg, Elon Musk, and Zach, and some other people. But regardless, Clean Technica has come a long way. We couldn't do it without you. We appreciate you guys so, so very much. This is a really special episode. I'm really happy to share with you. If you appreciate us and know that we're doing a great job to help push the climate conversation forward and trying to be the best that we can be for truth in journalism, please go to cleantechnica.com/support. And if you can chip in enough, you know, $5 a month to cover a cup of coffee for our team once a month, it would be awesome. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much and enjoy the show.
Welcome back for another episode of Clean Tech Talk, where we at Clean Technica interview clean tech leaders from around the world. With topics ranging from electric cars to climate change communication, you can listen to our full podcast series by visiting our website at cleantechnica.com.
All right, we're here for a special edition of Clean Tech Talk with founder Scott Cooney, CEO Zach Shahan, that's me, and head of everything else, Derek Markham. IT, editing, all kinds of stuff. Derek's sort of go-to man. So we just recently hit our 16-year birthday on Clean Technica. Yeah, we just barely missed doing an event last year for the 15, but we thought, okay, sweet 16, we'll do some special stuff for this. Had an article about it. And we were talking about doing a podcast this week about, you know, how the clean tech industries have changed since we started in this field. So we're sort of going back 16 years to the start of Clean Technica, but each of us might have sort of a different sort of starting point or focus area that we're focusing on for the comparison to 2024. And yeah, there's just a lot has changed. We're always in the weeds of covering the news every day on Clean Technica. And sometimes you step back and you're like, wow, the big picture, like it's just really good and actually very fulfilling sometimes to look at the big picture and just sort of recognize and appreciate how much we've achieved, how much the world has changed in a positive way. So yeah, starting with Scott here on, you know, just what are your kind of memories of 2008 or 2010 and, you know, how much different that era was than today?
It's that, you know, it's a whole different world, you know, as we were thinking about prepping for this episode and thinking back to where I even was in that time frame and kind of what I was talking about at the time. You know, there was an organic food movement. I think that was starting. You were starting to see a little bit of that. Ironically, Derek and I went to the same natural food co-op a long time ago in Fort Collins, Colorado, in a whole previous life. And Derek, I mean, if you remember that, but It's astounding to see how far the food movement has come, where now Costco is the number one purveyor of organic foods, right? So the environmental movement and how that can you know, turns into consumer culture has radically shifted so much. It's kind of incredible. And obviously on the clean tech side, when we started Clean Technica, you know, CFLs were so exciting. It was like here's your chance to reduce electricity use from a light bulb, and you know, it's just change your lights, you'll save the world. It was just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And
it literally took me a moment to realize what a CFL was.
Right?
I was like,
yeah.
we've been talking about them for so long, and I've thought about them because my house has them. It just came with it. And they're, you know, they take a long time to turn on. So I think about,
yeah.
But I was like, CFL, what's a CFL? And I was like, oh, CFLs, yes,
yeah,
of course.
Compact fluorescent light bulbs for those who missed that entire episode. You know, they took the long tubes that used to light up an office, you know, and give that horrible like office quality light, and they wrapped it up into a little bulb that you could like jam into a regular socket. And replace an incandescent bulb, and it was all the rage for a little while. Even though it was full of mercury, it flickered. It took forever to turn on and warm up. The light quality wasn't great, and I think they were so expensive when they first came out. They were insanely expensive, but the electricity savings was pretty legit. You know, I dropped a 60 watt bulb down to a 13 watt bulb, and provided, you know, in a minute or so, it would provide the same amount of light. So, you know, to think about that today and how much lighting has changed, and now you're seeing these like 20,000 LED light displays, you know, at venues that use less electricity than, you know, six incandescent bulbs or whatever. It's kind of astounding. So yeah, so and the technology, I mean, I used to drive a biodiesel Volkswagen Jetta, and I remember thinking biodiesel is the future. It's so exciting, you know, we can harvest plants and animals and grind them into like something we can put into a fuel tank and drive around town. Everybody would ask, does it smell like French fries? I was like, no, it's biodiesel. It's different. It's new age. It's technology. It's astounding. Yeah. So I don't know. It's the world has completely, completely changed. Derek, what do you think?
Wow. Yeah. Completely different world. I shared with you guys one of the early articles I wrote on Clean Technica, like 2009. I was living in Colorado at the time. I got an invite to the Aspen Environment Forum. So I went up there. I think we saw an early, I think it was a Ford Focus or Fusion, or like an early, I think it was a hybrid. And it was like this huge new thing. We went and saw this presentation about this, you know, the future of hydrogen. And this guy out of MIT invented this artificial leaf. You could basically put a unit in your home and split water into oxygen and hydrogen, and then run your home off of it. And like the tagline was like, you know, run your home for like 5 liters of water, something like that. And just looking at where hydrogen has gone, like there was a lot of hopium, as Mike Bernard likes to put it, about hydrogen at the time, because no one was really, I don't think anybody, at least on the blogging side and the green and clean tech media, we weren't really looking at, is this feasible? Is this viable? So I found that I thought that was pretty funny. The other thing, one of the things I covered a lot in the early years was consumer tech. So portable solar chargers. And so even a little unit like this
and a
little tiny battery, pretty expensive. And, you know, they were decent-ish compared to now, 2024. I mean, you can't even turn around without running into a portable solar panel and all sorts of, you know, portable power stations that are affordable. I mean, even home energy systems. And right around there, I was doing some home solar installs for a local company as well. And it was very elite. It was very bougie. You had to have quite a bit of money, and no one was putting home energy storage in it. And if they were, it was only if you're off grid. And then it was like lead acid batteries. And it was still a huge amount of money. And to, you know, fast forward to now, and we've got all sorts of, you know, EcoFlow and the Tesla Powerwall. It's no big deal. I mean, it's still a little, you know, low pricey, but I find that fascinating. And the same thing with vehicles. We went from, you know, maybe this hybrid thing is a thing, to now all the major automakers are putting out EV. Well, almost all of them.
Hybrid's a dirty word now.
Right.
Yeah, well,
and I want to say there's still a lot of hopium around hydrogen. Like I said, that maybe that's one thing that really hasn't changed, is there's still a lot of bullshit out there about hydrogen and like, oh, this is the future. I think the motivation maybe has changed, and where that stuff is coming from has changed, but hydrogen is still sort of this.
I was trying, I don't remember when it was. I remember looking at a National Geographic in like my house, and it had an ad for like the, GM ad, I think, for, you put hydrogen in, nothing comes out but water, whatever. It only emits water vapor, whatever. And I think it was the 90s or early 2000s. It was one or the others, who, yeah, high school or college. And I mean, it's the same basic pitch. It's the same basic, like they hardly change the message, because that's what captures people's imagination and attention. It's a very, the technology has this way of like, oh wow, that's so cool. And it captures people, pulls them in, and some people, get deep into it and dream about the hydrogen economy for decades. And but it is funny that it's like the same. That's the one thing that's sort of the same, is the hydrogen PR pitch from the 90s or early 2000s to 2024, 20 to 30 years later. And it's pretty wild. Yeah. And Derek, you had a specific, like, MIT, it was an MIT thing. It was like I
That
don't
was a
know, like
legit professor.
the weight of this technological, behemoth powerhouse MIT saying this is the future, And yeah, well, when I try to go back to the beginning of clean tech, it's funny, because right now, like, I can barely remember what happened in the morning or what we covered in the morning or yesterday. There's just so much, my brain is full. But the early days of clean technica, I can still remember vividly, because it was new and fresh, and it was a whole new world. It was exciting. And like the first year I was writing on the site, like mid 2008 to mid 2009, I would just write like four articles a month, like from my head, about sustainable lifestyle, green living, the connection between spirituality and vegetarianism, or breaking habits. How the biggest challenge to a greener life is finding ways to break habits. And it was like, that's all, like, I didn't know anything about clean tech news or green news. And it was like, after a year, there was like a bonus one summer, like, you write 40 articles and you get like a $500 bonus. And I was working as an English teacher in Poland. I'd moved to Poland for love. I met in graduate school a Polish lady, and after a year I moved over there after running a nonprofit in Charlottesville, Virginia, focused on sustainable transit and bicycling and sustainable development. And I was like, oh, it's summer. $500 was a lot in Poland. How do I write 40 articles though? Like, how do you do that? Like, where do you find the stories? So I had to like find all these sites, like where you get green news. Many of them are gone now; they no longer exist. And yeah, I just started to, write any news story I could about green stuff. And then I was like, after a month, I was like, wow, I could like really do this as like a job. This could be a job, like part. And so then I started doing it, part time, but a lot, for a year. And then in middle of 2010, I was asked to like just run Clean Technica, to take it over, to be the director of the site. And actually, before, I got into clean, I wrote about solar energy once or twice, and someone was, one of the editors then was like, that should really be on Clean Technica, not Planet Save, where I was writing, or Sustainablog. And I was like, oh, I'm not a technology guy, like, I'm not really a. And I got pushed to write there. Then, like a year later, I got pushed to run the site. And never saw myself as a tech guy, but I always felt like our job was translating techie stuff to normal people. And I feel like that's where we've always done pretty well. But yeah, I remember a few topics from back then. I remember writing about solar blowing up, and I remember that vividly, because some people complained that it was clickbait, that I was given the impression that solar panels were exploding. And I was just saying that the industry was blowing up, that it was getting big, and that's why it sticks in my head, because back then you're very sensitive at the beginning to like criticism. Over time, trolls roll off your shoulder like water, but I was like, I still it still imp had an imprint big enough on me that it comes to mind immediately when I think of that time. But the funny thing is, it was like, it was exploding. The solar industry was growing so fast, so big. If you look at a chart today of 2010, 2011 solar versus now, it looks like nothing. It looks tiny. But at the same time, like SEIA, the Solar Energy Industries Association, they were putting out, these forecasts quarter after quarter about how the industry would grow like really fast over the coming years. And there's big growth, big bar chart forecasts. And I think it even grew faster than they were forecasting, but it at least followed that trend. So it really did, a lot of people didn't believe in it. It's like, oh, that's the Solar Industries Association, whatever. These are solar fanatics think that solar is going to become something. It was like less than one, it was like 0.1% of electricity production in the US. Like, so it's just, if you look at it, like last year, it was the top source of new capacity additions in the US grid. It's becoming one of the biggest sources of electricity and the biggest source of new capacity. And it's crazy how much it's grown. And we've covered that whole period. We've covered all that, but at the same time, it's like you look back and you're like, wow, we were excited about like nothing. I mean, at the same time, you had to have that to build it. But at the time, like the amounts were tiny compared to today. But we, we saw where it was going. We had faith. But also, like, we wrote about high-speed rail. And I remember Obama, driven by Biden, big high-speed rail plan for the U.S., which got sort of kiboshed and sabotaged by Republican governors of certain states who wouldn't even take the money to build the high-speed rail lines, like free money for the state. So we went through that period of like, oh, this is the future of transport, of, long-distance transportation. And, eventually we got into electric vehicles, like, in 2012, like it wasn't even something we covered before, for a couple few years. And it's amazing. I mean, is how much that market has become. I mean, there's so much to say about that market. I'm not even going to start, but I do think it's funny that the same hydrogen pitches that were made like back then, and there was a real debate, like what's the future, hydrogen or battery electric? Like it's the same pitch today for it, but it's like embarrassing because they obviously lost. I mean, it's not, yeah. not gonna break through, dude. Like they were so uncompetitive even back a decade ago, let alone today. But anyway, that's sort of, there's more, so many stories come to mind, but the sort of just, we've just come a long, long, long way. Like EVs didn't exist practically. Solar was
e-bikes.
Nothing.
E-bikes were like e-bikes. This fringy DIY thing. And now they're everywhere.
Yeah, let's talk about e-bikes for a minute. Derek, you go ahead and start, Scott, and then I have a funny story on that too.
Man, I think the first e-bike that I rode was actually a conversion kit. It was a Super Pedestrian, I think it was, the Copenhagen wheel. And it was weird and clunky, and it replaced your rear wheel, and they shipped me a loaner unit. It took me a bit to get it on my bike, and, if the battery is in the wheel, like nobody... The physics of that just does not, like, from a reliability standpoint, didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but it was easy, just drop in thing. Put it on a little single speed that I had, and I was like, oh, game changer. But the price of that was the price of a new bike at the time. And now for the same price of that one wheel, you can get a pretty decent e-bike that'll, decent amount of miles, that has plenty of bells and whistles, up to, you got like the big three bike makers, specialized in Trek, are putting out these high-end e-bikes. If you want to drop $6,000 on a bike or $10,000, but for the average person, $1,000, you get a pretty nice e-bike, $2,000. But back then, there were guys, I remember reading about guys who were doing the DIY thing, and I think I covered an ebook, or maybe it's probably a physical book at the time, of how to convert your bike to an e-bike, and people using even lead acid batteries, like the little motorcycle batteries to power them. I mean, it was super clunky. I mean, you really, really had to want to do it to build it. And now, man, it's wild. I think it's beautiful. But the micro mobility thing electric skateboards were a thing for a while. They're not, yeah. I mean, unless you ride a skateboard, they're not really a thing. Scooters and the little quadricycles now. It's kind of amazing. And mostly battery tech and motor tech has enabled that. We've got the prices down to the point where it's not going to cost $5,000 for a little motor and a battery pack for your bike. I think that's really exciting.
But that Copenhagen wheel was like an internet sensation for like 5 years. It was like always coming up on StumbleUpon or Dig or wherever, the social media giants of the age. And it was just like everybody would get excited about it. And then, as time went on, it's like, why aren't they selling these? Why isn't this not like a big business now? And over time, you're like, this doesn't seem like it's going to turn into an actual like business success. Like, like what happened, and there were stories, what happened to the Copenhagen wheel and stuff. And yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't really know that full story of what happened to it. It just, I guess, like you said, it wasn't the most maybe practical or best solution with the tech in the end, as
Maybe
I
we
feel like
should run. They pivoted to electric scooters or something, but yeah, I don't remember the exact details. But the Super Pedestrian brand is still around, I think.
We should absolutely run a series like Where Are They Now? You ever see those like documentaries of like a famous actor from the 90s, and they're no longer on anyone's radar, and like they do these Where Are They Now things, and they show the guy, and he's got, he's hanging out smoking a lot of weed, living near a beach, and just like has, just kind of a retired life, and he's gained 60 pounds, and he's like, yeah, whatever, life is different now. We should
Yeah,
do that
we
with like
should. We
a bunch of
should.
clean tech companies that were just all the rage. What was the Bloom? You remember the
Yeah.
hydrogen
Right.
battery pack thing,
Yeah.
Bloom Energy? It was the biggest thing for so long. Yeah, I don't know. You guys remember that? Am I
Yeah,
misremembering?
I
Is that
remember
the
that. Yeah.
little portable one? Little
Yeah,
tiny
yeah.
unit?
Golly, I mean,
Like backed
I'm
by
sure that
Gate,
we have
right?
an interview with like the then CEO of Bloom on CleanTechnica somewhere. We could try and find that. Actually, you
Oh
know
my.
what? We'll add some really interesting articles to the show notes for this show. I think there should be some real doozies. Like Derek, you mentioned the MIT professor before. We'll put that one in the show notes. That would be really funny to see. But yeah, I mean these things that came and went. It's hilarious. Like Derek, the micro mobility thing is crazy now. You go to any big city. Oh man, the bike lanes are full. Just whoosh, 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 whoosh. These people just going 25 miles an hour, cruising by traffic that's sitting still on a one wheel or on a, a little skateboard or on some sort of e-bike, whatever. Do they have powered unicycles now? I don't know, but it's probably.
I think even 5, 6 years ago, they were still sort of an outlier. I mean,
Totally.
I think I bought my cargo bike. I have a rad wagon, would ride that all around town. And I was sort of the only, I mean, I live in a small town, but I was the only person that I ever saw on an e-bike. And now they're everywhere, especially
Everywhere.
older, the boomer generation and above. But it's phenomenal. It was sort of like, oh, you're cheating. And now everybody's doing it. I'm like, no, it's not cheating. You still got to ride the bike, but
So,
yeah, well. Yeah, you have more on that before I have a story
yeah, I
on
mean, hilariously, before CleanTechnica and everything that we're doing now, one of my the previous roles that I had, I was selling advertising for a green business directory. And this was like a print edition green business directory. We ended up printing a book that was 250 pages, like a green version of the yellow pages. And one of our main advertisers was this company called Ecomoto. And I'll have to look them up, see if they're still around. But they made these like e-bike conversion kits. And Derek, you're right. Like I remember I even got like I had free barter with him. It was like, okay, you want a half page ad in the book? Like we could barter some stuff. And he was always trying to get me to get this conversion kit with this battery hub that you had to like mount onto your existing wheel. And it never made sense to me. And it cost like $2,500. It was insane. And I was a bike commuter. I was a dedicated bike commuter at the time. I was like, I was all about like just using my own muscles to go places and stuff. And so I was like, no, nah, I'm good. I don't really need this thing. And God, you look back at that and it's like now you get these foldable e-bikes that go 25 miles an hour, have a 60-mile range, and they cost $700. You're like, whoa. The technology has, same thing with solar. The price has come down so much, the efficiency has just gotten so much better. Like everything in clean tech is moving really fast and getting so much better. It's
Yeah,
awesome.
it's funny because sort of the learning curve, the experience curve from lithium ion batteries scaling up for laptops and phones is sort of what
Yes.
enabled electric cars a bit. And then electric cars using them brought the price down, far more. Like it's like a fraction of what it was. So that enabled the e-bike, kind of revolution. But it's funny because my, so going back a bit far, my master's thesis at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, was on bicycle transportation and bicycle travel, how different types of things would affect transportation, different types of bike paths or bike lanes or bike parking or whatever. And I did a comparative in the Netherlands and in Maryland. And then, so from that, I got a job as a director of a nonprofit in Charlottesville, Virginia, focused on, like I said, sustainable development, transit, but mostly was biking. And at the time, like some of the cool like things that were starting to bubble in that field were bike sharing and colored bike lanes. These were two that I was really like, this is the future. And bike sharing ended up being really becoming a huge deal. And I felt like, see, I knew that was going to be huge. We tried to implement it in Charlottesville, but couldn't get it going. Well, yeah, limited. But one of our board members for a nonprofit was all about e-bikes. He was so big on the e-bike idea. And like, these were some of the first e-bikes. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, he was like, you know, it's good for older people who can't, who need help, need support. And I was like, yeah, but you know, just bike. And I was like, come on, it's not that hard to just bike, you know? Like, I don't know. I was like, you know, a young guy. And I was just like, I wasn't really thrilled with the idea of the e-bike. I wasn't against them. I was just like, yeah, they'll have, I guess they'll have a place. But this guy was nuts about them. And man, was he right. He was way more right than I was on the bike sharing or the colored bike lanes, which are bigger, much bigger things now. And I love the growth of colored bike lanes around the US and the world. But e-bikes was the thing, man. And I mean, you saw they start to rise. And all of a sudden, everywhere I go here in Southwest Florida, not exactly the best place for biking, someone's on an e-bike. Like, you almost never see a normal bike. But you see electric, you see all of these different Aventon, you see all these different e-bikes. Like, that's all people are using now. And I mean, I get it. I'm 42 now. I'm like, my knees sometimes, like, I'm not biking up that hill. Like, I need the pedal boost, you know? So I'm all about it. But, or I'm, you know, saving my legs for tennis later. I'm like, I don't want to be fried when I go play tennis later. You know, but anyway, it's just that's been huge. And now even in places like the Netherlands, where I was for a half a year, where I met with my wife, they're struggling. Like, how do we deal with these really fast e-bikes that everyone's using now? Where they already biked, like the town I was in was 60% bike commute rate. Like, they already had a ton of bikers, but now they're like dealing, how do we deal with them? Like, scooters, they already had a problem with scooters, but now it's a big problem because there's so many people who use e-bikes. But anyway, we can leave the e-bike, but I think that is one of the sort of bigger trends that we've seen sort of really in the past few years bubble up. But hello, clean tech enthusiasts. If you enjoy Clean Tech Talk and Clean Technica, please consider pitching in a few dollars a month at cleantechnica.com/support. That's cleantechnica.com/support, where you can sign up in seconds with a credit card, pitch in a few dollars a month, or whatever you like. Some people actually contribute $100 a month to help us cover climate change and clean tech and try to help the world one word at a time. Thank you. Any other big ones, any other big like then and now, either companies or technologies that you guys? I
feel like we got pitched in the clean and green media, a lot of vaporware, a lot of stuff. Micro wind turbines was the thing. And I think a lot of us did not really delve into the math and the physics of it. Does it really make sense? But I was like, every other week, somebody was launching something on Kickstarter or Indiegogo and these little tiny turbines. And we weren't as discerning. I feel like now we're a lot more discerning on Clean Technica. Yes. We're really looking at, is this an actual bona fide company? Do they have a product? Does it make sense? But I feel like we still get a bit of the wind turbine stuff, like not the wind turbines on on your house and all sorts of weird stuff that does not make a whole lot of sense. And then, I mean, you name it, like the hydrogen thing, all sorts of like home algae energy systems. And I mean, it was like sort of like the Wild West, you know, it was like new and different. I mean, I feel like, and the media then, when the internet was, I don't know, say it's young, but youngish, fewer publishers all battling for the same amount of traffic. So clickbait was king. And if one person covered it, then everybody else covered it. And so it must be legit because it's on the internet.
Yeah. So,
which I guess goes on still a bit now, but there's a lot more clean tech, you know, the companies or media companies that didn't cover clean tech, just like the big like car and driver, you know, car things. Now they're covering EVs where it used to be very niche. So it's getting really hard to stand out, I feel.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point too, Derek. And I mean, obviously, like my background's more in the business space. I have an MBA, and so I have come to Clean Technica sort of as like the, you know, sales side and the operation side and stuff like that. And I've gone to a couple of ad tech conferences, and I've sort of tried to make sure that this is a viable financial model, Cleantechnica, you know, going forward. And the media space has changed so much. It's really fascinating. And yes, back in the day, it was just like you had to cover stuff, otherwise you were just left behind. And so we were not as discerning. And you know, now I feel like we are, like you said, so much better. And one thing I'll also note is that we have always had a really beautiful agreement among everyone on our team that we would not take advertisers we didn't believe in. That was something from day one. We wanted no greenwashing on our site. We've never taken money from Exxon's or Chevron's or anybody that we would not agree with. There are definitely some that are like, you know, they're not pure companies, but they're doing a lot of great things. And it's like, okay, that's cool. But we would not run a program and promote stuff and do any ads or content marketing for anybody that was pushing anything that was like not good. We had one really interesting moment last year where our ad sales guy sold a package to a company without really realizing kind of what they wanted to promote. And it turned out it was hydrogen. And so then we were like on the hook to do this. And then we went back and forth a bunch. How do we, you know, do this and make it right? And we ended up publishing an article that we tried so hard to, like, you know,
well,
be clear and transparent
well, there's
stuff. And then, you know, golly, we just got skewered the comments, and our audience did not like it at all. So it was good to know that a lot of people see us as a way that you know, that if it's advertised on Cleantechnica, it's going to be a pretty good part of the clean tech revolution, and it's a pretty legit offering.
Yeah,
much
well,
like
with
our
hydrogen
now, we're much more discerning.
With hydrogen, there's a lot. There's so much in there. It's so much nuance,
so much.
because like it's not a, it's never going to be a viable solution for cars, for small transport, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And because there's been so much hype from that, especially from automakers, there's been a lot of pushback. But then people who have really delved into it, Mike Bernard, Michael Liebrich, you know, Mark Z. Jacobson, they leave an opening for like, oh, it can be useful for fertilizer, for perhaps, depending on who you talk to, perhaps long distance shipping, perhaps long distance trucking, depending on who you talk to, you know?
Heavy equipment, and, maybe, like some real niche-y kind of stuff.
And Michael Liebrich has like a ladder, like, you know, definitely not, maybe, you know, it definitely could be, that kind of thing. It's a very popular take on that. And so you have to have nuance with it, but then you have a lot of people who have just fallen to the, like, hydrogen's horrible and it's never going to be useful for anything, because it just fell into the flip side of the hydrogen hype, which is like hydrogen sucks, you know? And so it's hard to get the nuance line. I mean, we tried to cover it well. And then you've got like big organizations like RMI,
right,
which, you know, very well respected for their research, their discernment, and they're heavily behind hydrogen lately. So it's like, it's gotten quite complicated. Like, it's and not necessarily RMI, but like the media outlet they bought, which is a notable big clean tech media outlet, and it's been advertising hydrogen stuff. It got a big hydrogen advertiser and a lot of content. And it's like, it's weird because it hasn't gone away. They've gotten more clever with how it's marketed. Same with carbon capture and storage, similar kind of story with that. But they've gotten much more clever with how they market it and how they get into places. But yeah, with the small wind turbines, those still resurface here and there. And Mike Bernard, I mean, one of our, he's been knocking this down for a decade or longer, I don't know. And he had like a really epic piece like a decade ago or something on cheetahs, leopards, and whatever, like small wind, kite wind, different things, and why they made no sense. And this was at a time when Google had like bought this kite wind company, and like there was a lot of excitement about all different things that could be the future. And I mean, I edited the article, and I remember like, yeah, this is never, he's right, this is never gonna work, but Google's still behind it, and so and so's behind it, and this is behind it. And I mean, it proved out he was right, and they dumped it eventually after years of dumping money into it. And he resurfaced that a while. He was like, maybe it's time to just, you know, republish that with a little update, you know, because like it looks like there's a little resurgence in some of these things. And I was like, yeah, let's do it again, and you can say how right you were, you know, which Mike loves to do. He was, loves to point out that, you know, he was skeptical, and you know, did the engineering and the math. when others were not. So big props to him for that. But yeah, and the media landscape. Yeah, the media landscape is a world of difference because everybody covers it now. Tech sites, car sites,
yeah,
even political sites. Like everyone covers clean tech now. And
yeah, Reuters has a whole section on climate stuff, and yeah, it's more news and a little bit less tech, but it definitely covers some of that stuff.
And Google has changed its algorithm so much in the last 15 years. So it's like they really shut out the ability for smaller, newer sites to do it, to get any coverage. It's all like legacies gets priority. And it's, I'm not really a fan of how Google has changed over the years and how the media landscape has there's pros and cons because there's tons of conspiracy theories that have spread on small news sites and blogs and social media. And giving more prominence to legacy established companies helps to keep that out. But then at the same time, you have less competition, less diversity, less opportunity to like have something else going on. And so I'm a little not really happy with where the internet media landscape is. But all in all, I guess you got to be happy that clean tech has become such a big thing across all of it.
That's, I feel like because of the way that this has been consolidated, I feel like the information that maybe the general public might come across, like say hydrogen, right? They might come across this thing. Of course, that's the future. I had my one of my sons came home from middle school. He was really excited telling his mom all about how hydrogen, hydrogen, hydrogen. I was like, you know, but the teacher saw something on Google or you know Google News or something, and then that becomes the reality for people. It's sort of like the, you know, the soundbite quality of the news. If you don't dig into the details, you know, or things go viral by how we, you know, we share information these days through social media. Back in 2008, 2009, it was the Wild West, you know, and things were going viral that made no sense, didn't make any sense technological, like small wind turbines and hydrogen. And that I feel like it just did such a disservice to people, especially like, if you're in school and you're thinking, what am I going to study with my career? You know, oh, hydrogen, you know, like, where are you now?
Yeah, super, super interesting. And you know, when you think about it, the amount of misinformation that's floated around for so long, some of it very purposeful and some of it just because of what we're talking about, you know, that these crazy ideas spread and that things, you know, it's something that's exciting. And if you don't know any better, you're going to share it on social media and stuff like that. And the challenge is, you guys probably saw the social dilemma, that great documentary about how social media influences public opinion and stuff like that. You see one piece of misinformation, it takes you six pieces of corrective information to overwhelm your initial belief if you believe that. And so, you know, when you have that combined with the fact that people want to believe certain things, then they really concrete themselves into an opinion. And then it's really hard to shake them out of it, no matter what, the evidence, science, all this kind of stuff. And it's just too easy these days for somebody to become a TikTok influencer or a YouTube influencer and spout a bunch of BS and have a bunch of people following them because they want to believe what the person is saying. And I think that's one of the fundamental challenges that we face in clean tech, because obviously, Derek, you saw it in real life right there. Somebody comes home and they've got this thing and they're like so excited about this idea. And personally, like as we go through our journeys, as you know, I've been kind of a lifelong environmentalist. I know you guys have been too. You know, seeing this stuff in your personal life is like, really, you see it and you're like, oh God, no, come on. You got to hang on. Let me send you a few articles from Clean Technica. Let me set the record straight kind of thing. And it drives me a little bit bonkers, you know, and watching, you know, these things happen and play out in real life. And it's interesting, you know, a year or so ago, I had a friend who was weighing a decision between an EV and a gas car, and you know, it was talked out of things at the dealer. You know, the dealers were literally pushing them, this EV, we don't know, you know, it's like, we don't know if this is going to be right or whatever. And I kept saying, just buy a Tesla, because you know, that's the easiest, they're the best, they know what they're doing, whatever. Like, if you want to cut through the BS, like, that's the best way to do it. And the person ended up buying a gas guzzling SUV, and you just go, oh, facepalm. Like, there was such a, you know, an opportunity to like create infrastructure that's clean versus create infrastructure that's not. And then, you know, you think about the repercussions of that, and it's, you know, 20 years of supporting Vladimir Putin with, you know, one third of your oil purchases. And it's like, oh, it's like so frustrating. But then, you know, flash forward a year later, I have another friend going through the exact same decision, a Subaru versus a Model Y. And the thing that, you know, and her family's always been a Subaru family. And so she was like pretty, and I was like, ah, she's going to buy a Subaru. But then at some point she ended up buying the Model Y. And, you know, I talked to her a little bit about it without trying to like, whatever. And then, you know, the thing that got her was dog mode. You know, she has a dog and she just like fell in love with the idea that you could have dog mode in your car. And so the, you know, the clean tech revolution has gotten to a point where we're addressing the things that are convenient for people, whatever. And it makes it easier now for a lot of people to just believe the good things are good. You know, when CFLs were just the worst sacrifice you made to like save the planet, to save the planet, a few kilowatts here and there, you know. Anyway, go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, no, the social media side, I mean, has me thoroughly depressed and concerned for the future of society because, like, I've watched tons of long discussions from experts on it, and there's no clear solution. There's no, like, I mean, there are potential solutions, but they're as unrealistic as, you know, a unicorn landing in my podcast studio. Like, it's just, it's not.
Yeah, we're never going to go back.
Yeah. And there's, and like, oh, you, they could do this, but obviously they're not going to, because that would hurt their revenue.
Why wouldn't they?
And it's like, so it's like, oh my gosh, it's so hard to have any, it's like, we're not built for this scale of information spread, you know, as a species. Like, we're not built for this scale of communication and ability to get in these giant bubbles. Like if you live in a small town, like maybe one other guy will talk to you about some weird thing on the internet. You can find a million and you'll feel like this is normal. This is the world as we know, and about anything. And so you just, and like you said, it's what people find what they want to believe. And that's often not the best strategy having a reality based life.
Phenomenon is the confirmation bias. You know, it's like if you're already biased towards something and then somebody confirms it for you, you're like, clearly, you know, it doesn't matter if this person's an expert or not. It doesn't matter. It's like, oh, all I need to eat are rocks for the rest of my life. This person said, I love rocks.
The earth is flat.
Rocks my whole life. Man, it really like scrapes out your digestive tract. It has a lot of hard minerals in it. I think that's good for you. I mean, honestly, people will believe anything they want to believe. And you're just like,
no, there's probably a big society online for eating rocks. I'm not even joking.
Like, I bet if you Google it, there's one. You know, there's a flat earther society. Why not?
I mean, there's society. People who 2024 who think the earth is flat. They're convinced of it. Like, how is it possible? I don't know, but they must get into some bubbles on the internet where they convince each other of it. And I don't know how they do it. I don't want to know. Like, it's
poisoning is a terrible thing.
The second thing you highlight, I think that is huge. Like, where I live, you just see EVs everywhere now, and you see people who, as far as you know, have no connection to this world, getting Teslas, getting electric Mercedes, getting electric Hyundais, getting electric everything, Rivians. And you're like, and the biggest question I have, like, every day when I'm out there and I see so many of these around, it's like I just saw a parent driving a new Model X who wasn't driving an electric car before. And I, you know, vaguely know this person, same, their daughters in the same grade as one of, or same class as one of my daughters. And I'm like, how did they get into it? Like, this is my question every day. Like, how did they get convinced to get an electric car? Because it used to be like a small, you know, you had to be in that world and you had to be convinced of it, and you were like excited about it. Now, like, anyone will buy one. They're just, because partly it's just been normalized. And I know that's what you highlight. That's the key, is a lot of these things have been normalized now, where it's not like, it's not a big deal. It's just like, oh, do you want a new electric car? Yeah, why not? It's not like, oh, but what, I mean, there's still a lot of questions about range and charging, all that stuff, but it just becomes so normal that normal people do it without a lot of research or reason for it.
Only and on like the upward slope of the S curve. It's advertised on the Super Bowl in so many ways, you know, it's like all the car companies are making them. So it's much more mainstream and acceptable. It's also like much thanks to all those early adopters who bought the Roadsters and got things going and gave people rides. 2018, I took my first ride in a Tesla and it blew my mind. The salesperson clearly not allowed to do this, put it in ludicrous mode just to show it to us.
Oh, they
And
were encouraged to do that.
oh, were they?
Yeah.
Maybe. He told me, like, okay, don't tell anybody, but I'll do this for you.
Oh, well, I
Okay.
don't know.
Right,
Maybe
what have
that
you
was
done?
his
Anyway,
sales tactic.
brilliant sales tech. I still didn't buy one from him at the time, but I was still driving my biodiesel Jetta at that point. Yeah, so like, yeah, he puts in ludicrous mode, and like I actually, it was funny, it was a Valentine's date that I went on, and it was I brought a lady who's very green, and I said, all right, we'll go test drive one car, and then we'll go to dinner, and we'll go test drive the next car at the Tesla dealer. And we did, and put it in ludicrous mode, and I still have the video of it. And it was just like our faces just like just like absurd speed, you know, and those things tend to change people. And so the early adopters got it, the technology got great, now it's pretty mainstream, and you see people like that. I'd be really curious to actually run a little survey of people like that who are first adopters of something like an electric car, and say, you know, what was your journey like?
Oh, see, I want to survey all the people out there who are like just got one in the past year or two, and I'm gonna be like, why did you get it? Like, how did you find out? Like, what got you into them? Because they fascinate me, because I know they're a different breed, they're followers, whatever. But like you said, like every car commercial I see almost is for electric car now for the past couple of years, like, because they all want to be seen as a leader in this field, so that when this, anyway, even if they're not selling a lot. And the other thing is like solar ads. Like, I am so sick of solar ads. Like, I used to be excited, wow, it's a solar ad. Now I've heard so many of these annoying solar ads. I'm like sick of them, but I'm like, well, it's good. It's normalized. It's in everyone's subconscious. You know, everyone knows you can save money with solar potentially, you know. I don't think they're as well done as the car company ads, but like, there's just a lot of less well produced ads out there on solar, which is a challenge. But yeah, it's all become so much more normal. That's my final thought, is it's a positive, and it's also like, in some ways, I still wonder about how new people come to these now, and also how we get to, 90% adoption. Like, how do we go from here to there? But I think it's just a natural process at this point. I mean, we still do what we do, and we try to provide the best information, reviews, best, we have, often 15 years or some 10, 15 years of experience to like give people proper advice and proper, context on stuff, which I think is very useful. But yeah, Derek, you.
I was just gonna just briefly. I mean, I live in a small town. There's three copper mines here, open pit, right? They're ugly, whatever. Totally necessary in the electrification, right? So formerly Phelps Dodge, I think it's Freeport McRoran. I can't remember what they're called now. They actually have a billboard up in town that I can't remember the tagline, but it has this futuristic looking electric car and basically saying, you know, the future, we need this copper. So I feel like that's very interesting, because typically the mining industry is, you know, I won't say the good old boy, but it is a totally different crowd, you know, and it's the pickup
Yes.
crowd, which is a topic for a whole other podcast, I think. But, you know, these are the guys who roll coal on the Prius on their way to work in the mine, but the mine is actually promoting how they're going to be green for the future. It's fascinating to me.
It's funny how, you know, back in the day, the environmental movement was pretty anti-mining, right? And so now, as environmentalists, there's a lot of times I'm pretty pro-mining. You know, I'm just like, you know, we just found the world's biggest lithium reserve was literally just discovered. It's so mind-blowing that that's like still happening in the world, and it's like in Nevada and it's in the United States, so it's fantastic for US manufacturing and all that kind of stuff. And it's like mind-blowing. And that was something, instead of being like, oh God, they're gonna start mining again, it's like, oh sweet, we just found a huge deposit of lithium. This is great. We can make a ton more electric cars. So that was
Yeah,
pretty exciting stuff.
it's a challenge, because you have the push and pull on that now, because you need it obviously for, and this is a much better future than, but I mean, nobody wants a mine in their backyard, or a lot of people just will immediately be more opposed to mining for copper or lithium or whatever than fossil fuels and burning them. But copper is a funny one, because it's a huge part. It's already a big industry, but it needs to get humongous, because it's for the motors of electric cars, it's for charging stations, it's for wind power, it's funny because it's a big industry in Poland, and my wife's dad was like an engineer at a copper mine, like head of mechanic of the machinery, like repairs and stuff in Poland. And we met with a copper organization when I lived there for Clean Technica, because they were like, look, this is huge. Nobody's talking about this, but you have to, we have to do something. We never found out a way to partner. They were sort of hard. They were keen on talking and talking, but then didn't really have a plan. But it was this copper organization. Like, people don't realize copper is the future with clean tech. And I was like, it's like interesting, So it is, there's it is a resurgence in some industries. It's a new world for other, it's a new whole industry for some things, I mean, yeah, there's others like graphite and other things that need to really grow up, not just expand. But yeah, it's crazy to think, it's just, if you think back what were we covering in 2010, 28, 2008, whatever, we've come a long way, baby, right?
We really have. And I, it's interesting, you talked a little bit before about like how social media, it's a beast, and it's out the, the train has left the station, and it's like hard to see how this gets better. But it's interesting, Zach. I've seen a lot of people returning back to analog versions of things, reading physical books. Many of my friends are joining book clubs. They have some nostalgia around this stuff, and I think people are starting to do a lot more reflection, meditation, journaling, and like just realizing the digital world is like overwhelming to us. So I feel like there's a big resurgence towards that, which is really cool, and getting off your phone. I have one friend who is like, 1 week a month I'm on social media, the rest of the time I just get off. So I think people are doing a lot of that kind of stuff. So I think that's cool. And then, think about it this way, like CleanTechnica, we ran the Google Analytics at one point. We've had over a half a billion page views on our website since our inception, which is unbelievable. It's like it's a real testament to you guys and to everybody who's written for us and shared us and all that kind of stuff. And we've influenced so many lives. So I mean, as a foil to like some of the BS that's out there, CleanTechnica has had an incredible influence, and I don't want us to lose that in the grand scheme of things. Crazy story. I had a guy I ended up living with for a little while, who he moved in to the same house I was living in. Had no idea. He was just kind of a cool dude. He had worked for Tesla. He worked in solar installs, and he was doing permaculture type stuff. He'd kind of evolved his career and wanted to be outside more. And so, we were talking, and at some point he's like, well, oh, so what do you do? And I was like, oh, I do this thing. And he's like, oh, what website? And I was like, CleanTechnica. And he's like, you're kidding. And I was like, no. And he's like, yo, my professor in college like used CleanTechnica to like teach us stuff about solar and wind and all this kind of stuff. And he's like, literally, that's how I started my career. He said, this what got me into
Wow.
solar. He started working for it's a nonprofit that does the low-income solar roof
Grid alternatives.
and grid alternatives. Yeah. So he started working for grid alternatives. His whole had a whole career. He ended up like selling a bunch of Teslas. He was a really good Tesla salesperson. I was like, you're kidding. And he's like, no, it's 15 years ago. I was like, oh my God, that's so
Oops.
cool. So we've changed so many people's lives for the better. And we're just gonna keep doing that. That's what CleanTechnica does. It's what every one of us gets up in the morning and says, this is what drives us to keep doing. And so we can continue to be like a bastion of hope and inspiration, and keep people driving in the right direction and keep that S curve going, right? And at some point we'll hit inflection points on so many of these things. And then it's like, okay, cool, we're the train has left the station. Like solar, it's like we don't even need to talk about solar anymore. Everybody accepts that solar is awesome now. Like it's not a
Yeah.
question anymore, and EVs is basically getting to that place, and wind power is kind of getting to that place.
Yeah,
So it's cool to see that history of what we've done here.
I need to send you some stickers for your car, or maybe get some more shirts. But
Heck
it's
yeah,
but
more
yeah,
shirts.
it's crazy. I mean, I've said before, I think on a podcast, there was one. I mean, we're still small, like in the grand scheme of things, we influence a lot of people, but you still see yourself as like a small outlet, whatever. And but I there was one day where I met three or four CleanTechnica readers on a tennis court in one day. Like, oh, like I blew my mind. I was like, this
Yeah,
is unbelievable. like
it's super
like
cool.
it was pretty wild. And it w there was like an era when like you had to go to like us or a few other places for news on this. Now it's more challenging because everybody's covering it. So it's harder to stand out as like the place to go for this, you know, because every place is the place to go for this.
Yeah. But
so it is challenging
that,
the support, anyone, any
kind
support
of
we can
going
get,
on.
yeah, to help us, you know, remain, you know, in this role. But yeah, with that, and then my final comments, you know, aside from that funny thing, is I agree. I think people have burnout from the level of social media and internet life, streaming, everything. And I think a lot of people have realized it. And that's my one hope, is like social media companies aren't going to solve it, but maybe as you know, maybe humans will just get a little bit more like balance with how they approach it. But, you know, I worry, like I have, you know, kids in elementary school who are, you know, dying for phones and dying to be on the phone. And I don't know how to navigate that, because I was never in that fate. I was, you know, we didn't have smartphones when I was a kid. So it's really challenging. And I think, well, will that be like, what helps and what hurts in that case? Like, does it help to get like a lot of exposure to it young and then be like, oh, it's just, you know, like, and then, you know, push back and realize, hey, I don't want to live on my phone? Or does it help to like, to develop the idea, like you should try to develop the idea that you should really only spend a little bit of time on a phone or whatever to have a balanced, good, healthy life, and that there's all this crap on the phone that can influence you? Like, it's really hard to navigate with two young girls, and this stuff affects girls more than boys, women more than men. Like, there's just much more of an issue with I mean, it affects both gender, but I mean everyone, but it's just there's much more of an issue with women getting self-conscious and so much about imagery and stuff. So it's really hard to figure out how we deal with it. But I am hopeful that people realize, after a little bit of overexposure, you know, I want to write on a notebook, or I want to read a physical book. I want to detach from the phone a bit. So I don't know, Derek, what are your final comments? And Scott, if you have any more, I think you had final, and then I have, but if you had more final comments,
I don't know if I have anything to add, but I feel like, you know, this, like our tagline, the future is now. I'm actually excited to, like, we know, you know, solar, wind, EVs, e-bikes, what's next? There's stuff that is, you know, emerging, but it's in the lab right now, you know, the supercapacitors and, you know, fast charging batteries, but we don't even know what that is yet, but it has the potential. If it has the potential for the rate of change that we've seen with electric cars and electric bikes and solar, I mean, maybe it's going to accelerate. So in 5 years, the landscape will be unrecognizable. That's my hope anyway. It's just will be the norm.
I 100% agree with you, Derek. And that's one of the really fun things about being the Clean Technica team. We get to stay on top of this stuff for our job. It's kind of fun. And I guess I'll just wrap up, you know, to dovetail on that, how much things have changed and how much things will continue to change. I went to Climate Week for the first time. I'd never been to a Climate Week conference. So I went to Climate Week in New York just because I happened to be on the East Coast at the time. And seeing the amount of money and investment flowing into climate tech stuff now definitely inspires me to think that no matter what the solutions are, there are going to be lots and lots of solutions that come on rapidly and scale, because investors are throwing money at it. VCs are starting to throw money at it. We're starting to see a lot of reasons. Philanthropists are throwing money at it. There was the anecdote that I like to tell from that conference was that back in the early days of Clean Technica, when I would go to a conference, if we got free coffee and bagels, we were pretty excited. That was like, whoa, this conference has a sponsor that gave it, you know, Einstein bagels or whatever. And this one, I don't think I paid for anything. There was amazing cocktails, everything sponsored. There was hors d'oeuvres that were just handed around in trays with people dressed nicely, and, you know, all this stuff that I'm kind of a hippie granola guy, and like, I'm not really used to going to conferences like that, but this was off the charts. I could not believe how much the conference landscape has changed in clean tech since we started. And that, and it was all good sponsors, not a lot of BS, like, you know, Hydrogen, Chevron promoting something, you know, sustainable brands had Bayer as their main sponsor of their agriculture, revolution and permaculture, section of their program last year, and people were like, "Don't you guys own Monsanto?" So there was nothing like that. Climate Week was 100% like great sponsors, really cool companies doing really cool things, paying good money to get people in the door to learn about their products, and I think that portends a bright future.
Good stuff. Well, it was fun chat. Flew by, sort of like the last 15 years. Really, really fun stuff. I'm sure a lot more. I was thinking to talk about a lot more in there. There's so many tangents or side stories to go down, but I think that was good. So hope people enjoyed it. And don't forget to subscribe, like us, wherever you're watching or listening, whether it's YouTube, Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple, iTunes, and hit the bell to get notifications for new videos or new podcasts. And thanks for supporting us. Yeah, appreciate it. The future is now. Let's go live it.
Thank you for listening to Clean Tech Talk. Join us next time to get your electric fix. If you would like to sponsor our podcast, send us an email at accounts@cleantechnica.com. That's accounts at cleantechnica.com. Thanks.